Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, and welcome to Yeah, But It's Not As Simple As That. My name is Sam Wolfson. It's finally getting warmer, and you know what that means, an epidemic of violent crime on the streets of London. Already this year, we've been hearing about rising knife crime, shootings, and 27 young people dead in the capital. And with temperatures getting warmer and no sign of a change, things could be set to get worse.
There had been a shooting directly opposite this school, and there was a zebra crossing. There was about 5,000 children crossing, and right next to it was this big shrine. And I just stopped there for so long, and I couldn't help looking at it, thinking, these kids have to walk past this every day.
There doesn't seem to be a consensus on what's behind the rise. Some people are blaming a lack of police funding. Others say it's the government, perhaps drugs. Max Daly, who's on the podcast this week, has linked the problem to social media. So is London becoming more dangerous because of petty squabbles on WhatsApp?
It's a complex problem, so it's going to have kind of complex solutions. And you can do some knee-jerk things like kind of put more bobbies in the beat.
We're going to hear from Max in a bit, but before that, here's Carol, a youth worker. She's had to deal with a lot of these kinds of attacks herself. She's worked quite closely with both perpetrators and victims, which you're going to hear about in a sec. And sometimes she's even felt herself at risk.
So this young man was 15. I'd known him from when he was 11. He was in and out involved with gangs. He would tell you till he's blue in the face that he had no involvement with gangs, but we all knew that he was involved with gangs. He was involved in a couple of stabbings. He was habitual knife carrier and would always carry knives on him, conceal them in his shoes, in his socks, down his trousers, in his waistband, in his boxer shorts. So, yeah, habitually carry a knife. He pretended to be a girl on social media, arranged to meet this young person that was from another gang, got him to an area and then kind of jumped out on him and pulled a knife out on him, stabbed him in the knee. I don't know how it ended up in the knee. I think there was a bit of a scuffle, but he ended up stabbing him in the knee. Certainly, there seemed to be quite a pattern of that going on at one point. We had a number of young people I know were involved in the same thing. They would set up accounts on Snapchat or Facebook, and then for some of them, they would share the phone. So a couple of them would have the phone. One night, one would be chatting to him. Another night, someone else would be chatting to him, pretending to be this girl. And then they would do that for a couple of weeks, sometimes even longer. And then it would kind of lull the person from the other gang into a position where he would feel comfortable meeting girls off the internet. But I think that's quite a thing. I mean, I've met a fair few people that have kind of been threatened, stabbed, and also people that have used that as a way to get to know other people. So the reason why he wanted to get involved with that violence, use the knife or potentially stab this young person, was because he knew that he was in a rival gang or a rival group. He said to me that the actual beef between them wasn't even directly between them two. We counted back to 7 people in between that actually they had the initial tension. And then there were 7 incidents in between before that incident. You know, it wasn't even the person before's issue or before that or before that. It was so far removed from actually where they were now. And it had been going on for about nearly 2 years altogether. But unfortunately, that's kind of how it is in terms of the tit for tat kind of attacks that go on. Sometimes when I've got them to look back at how it started and where it started, some of them don't even know. They just know that I don't like that group, I don't like that gang, I don't like that person. So I've just got to go and do what I've got to do. So after the stabbing, they were slightly worried, not really worried enough to kind of make any changes, but certainly a little bit worried, but not too worried. I think there's quite a hype. I think they're quite excitable. I've dealt with a few cases where stabbings have taken place, even a murder, and there's been CCTV in place that have shown the boys running away, laughing, jumping, kind of quite happy. I think a lot of it is adrenaline. I think there's fear there as well, although I don't think any of them would ever admit that. I think largely a lot of it is fear, nervousness. I can't believe I've just actually done that. A lot of them were eventually received big sentences for a murder that took place. I think there was quite a large number of them that were either convicted for something or convicted of manslaughter in relation to a young person that was killed. In relation to that specific incident, he wasn't ever charged with it. So the other young person didn't really engage with the police. So, and unfortunately, something that we see a lot is a lot of young people involved with stabbings that don't end up getting charged for those stabbings.
So this is obviously difficult work, and it's made more difficult for Carol because she knows people herself who have died because of street violence.
I got a call at early in the morning, 6:30 in the morning, from a young person I used to work with. I ignored it because I thought it's 6:30. Why are you calling me? And then I got a text saying you need to phone me urgent. So I called him and then he told me that this young man that I've been working with had been murdered the night before. So I work with under 18s. Some of the young people that I work with, I stay in contact with every now and then just to kind of catch up, see how they're getting on. I'd known this young person from when he was 13. He was now in his early 20s. He had literally called me 24 hours before, kind of off the cuff. How you doing? Thought I'd just give you a quick call. We had quite a long chat, about 45 minutes to an hour on the phone. He was so happy, in such a good place. Really kind of positive chat. He was not kind of minimising where he was in life. He was accepting that he was still kind of ducking and diving, so to speak. He was very real. He was kind of quite open about some of the things he'd been involved in. I'd known about, although he was older now, I'd known about stuff that he'd been involved with since he finished with us, you know, after he turned 18. And we'd arranged to meet like 3 or 4 days after. I was going to go and meet him and we were going to have some lunch. And then literally 24 hours later, he was stabbed and passed away, unfortunately. Compared to a lot of the other cases, it's not had a lot of press. It was a good couple of weeks before he was even named in the press. When the press kept putting out the images of all the young people and the adults, kind of photos, names, he just... It was his age and the place where he was killed, nothing else. So quite limited. And that's kind of the sad thing, is that he's just another statistic in the paper of someone else that's been killed in London. And it's kind of quite sad. I think sometimes for the professionals working with these young people, people don't really consider that we're upset by it as well. You know, we're, for whatever period of time, we're part of their lives as well, wanted or unwanted. But you kind of watch these young people grow and you see them. And I think it shook me more because I'd just spoken to him the day before. And we had plans to meet, and it kind of... I'm so sorry. I think that's the reality of how quick it can happen. I think the professionals feel it as well. I think, you know, obviously I can't imagine what families are going through, because I know how I feel as a professional. You know, sometimes I wouldn't speak to him for 9 months, a whole year, without speaking to him. So it wasn't like I was in his life every day. I think it was more shocking because I'd just spoken to him. And that's kind of how quick it can happen. You think he had plans, he was in quite a good place, but they can kind of, I think for those that kind of live in those situations, they're involved with groups or gangs or however you know, however people want to call it, there's kind of a sense of, even when they want to, how can they ever kind of remove themselves from it? Because people that might, 10 other people down the line might know them from, have heard their name before and know that they were connected to a certain group and that they can just take a life without kind of, that person that killed him might not, he might be like the other case where there's 7 people in the middle. It's got nothing to do with him. There's part of me that questions how much he was trying to get out. There was still quite a financial pull in terms of things that he was involved with. But I told him that I'd recently left my job to do some work focusing specifically on gangs rather than offenders. And he was really positive. He kept saying, you know, I want to come and help you. I want to tell these kids how it really is, tell these kids what life is like. You know, if you don't kind of sort yourselves out. He was kind of suggesting that, you know, he wanted to make a difference. And I think he probably did. I've worked with a few young people that have sadly passed away. I've not been to a funeral before. I was invited to one many years ago, a different incident. A young person was killed on a moped. You know, some of these families in their moment of grief, I don't think they want people that work with their child because they were offenders. They might not want them there. You wouldn't want family questioning, who's that over there? And then having to kind of answer that. I would like to go to his funeral because I could see past, in no means am I kind of saying that he was innocent. Like I said, I knew a lot of what he'd been involved with. But I knew another side to him. He was a really funny, really bright, intelligent young man. And like I said, you know, for whatever period of time we're in their lives, they become kind of part of our lives. I know that I managed to get him into college and I took him on his first day. So I got him like a little envelope, a little plastic folder, put a notepad in there, got him some pens. I put a big pink fluffy pen in there for him to write with as a bit of a joke. Put a Mars bar in there and a bottle of Coke and kind of did this whole sort of bag thing and then put £2.50 in there and I picked him up and I dropped him off to college and I said, oh, I feel like your parents, like taking you to school on your first day, like your lunch money's in there, a little snack for you. And, you know, it was kind of a bit lighthearted and because really I was just dropping him off. But I wanted to make sure he was prepared. And like I said, you know, for whether it's wanted or unwanted by the families or the young people, you're part of their life for that period. And it's hard not to get involved with young people in terms of you do the work because you want to help them. And it's hard to kind of come away from that sometimes when you see a young person that really wants to move forward, but sometimes is kind of caught up in stuff that they just can't control. They can't come away from it. They can't kind of move forward. It's kind of like a shadow behind them. And then whatever he does, the shadow does, and that kind of sticks to him. I had a lad that I worked with that said to me, I could come back to my area in my 30s in a suit and a tie, married with children, my own house, my own job, and someone's going to remember me and someone's still going to have issues with the things that I've done in my past.
thanks very much to Carol for sharing some of those stories with us. So you get a sense of some of the individual cases. What we don't quite know yet is why this is happening.
Hi, I'm a journalist who specialises in writing about drugs and crime, and I write a column for Vice called Narcomania.
So Max, he's written a lot about knife crime in the past for Vice. In a recent article, he said, "It's a bloody time to be young and working class on the streets of London." So obviously we've heard some quite distressing stories, but it's always hard to tell with crime reporting whether, you know, individual distressing stories like that are reflective of a wider picture. I mean, do you get a sense that there is a rise in overall violent attacks?
Yeah, the statistics show that during 2017 and 2018, there's been a definite rise in the number of young people murdered on the streets of London. And, you know, in April this year, in early April, there were three young people killed in the space of 3 days. And I think the last time this was as high as the figures of 2017, 2018 was in 2008.
And so why was it high in 2008 and why is it high again now? Do we know?
It's a very complex question, that, with many, many different possible answers to it. I mean, all one thing you certainly can say is that anyone who tries to blame it on one particular thing is certainly wrong. So you get, you know, politicians or newspapers or MPs, whatever, saying it is down to social media, or it is all down to the drug trade, or it is all down to lack of policing or stop and search. So that they're all wrong when they say that it is just down to one of those things. And what it is, it's a complex mix of many different things.
Let's go through those one by one.
Yeah, I mean, what I kind of decided to do for a recent article in Vice, because everyone was asking, why is this going on? So I decided to look at the cases that had gone through the courts, the murders in London of young people over 2017, to look at what caused these deaths. And what I found was it was a kind of a mix of kind of petty, almost petty social media beefs, tit-for-tat revenge, and kind of small world rivalries. I didn't find that particularly it was the drug trade. I didn't find much evidence of any kind of drug turf killings like you might get in America, for example. To give you an example, there was one guy who was killed because he put too many laughing emojis on Snapchat. There was one guy who was killed because some eggs were thrown at the wrong front door. So it's that kind of stuff that people are getting killed for. And obviously there's also the whole postcode rivalry thing. There's people making music videos on YouTube and then other people getting annoyed. There's one guy last year was killed over a 10 bag of weed that was a dispute from a 3 years old dispute over a 10 bag weed.
I mean, social media has been around for a long time. Issues around sort of postcode wars have been around for a long time. Do we have any idea why it seems to be sort of bubbling over particularly now?
There's a definite domino effect. So violence kind of begets violence. When someone gets stabbed in your neighbourhood, people arm themselves more than they had done before. Then there's obviously like revenge attacks. So if someone's kind of crew member is stabbed, then the other lot are going to try and get revenge on the other lot. So there's this kind of almost a bit of an arms war. There's a kind of a tit for tat revenge. So once you kind of do get flurries of attacks, and the reason you get flurries of attacks in particular areas, which has happened this year, like you'll get a flurry of attacks in Walthamstow or Tottenham or Hackney, is because people are getting armed up as a result of what's happened in their area, and the friends of those who have been killed are taking revenge on their suspected attackers. But obviously there's a lot more kind of deep-lying reasons to this.
It's quite an interesting issue because as things like cultural issues, music, social media have come up, normally there is a kind of liberal response to when those things have been brought up in the past, particularly by conservative politicians going, you know, it's not just because there's violent lyrics doesn't mean that there's going to be violence. That kind of attitude seems to have changed this time, that people are actually looking a bit more into, for example, the lyrics of songs.
The only reason I'm saying this is because this is what the people who have done the stabbing and who have been stabbed tell me. That's the only reason I'm saying it. So, but they're saying that it's not just because of that, but that is part of a kind of a culture of many different cultural things and stuff going on that is making this occur so much. And, you know, I think a lot of people do live in this really small world. So if you're living on an estate in whatever in South London, you feel trapped. Any slight kind of lack of respect can be a huge, huge thing, way more than for the average person on the street. They could maybe forget about it. But in some of these communities, it's blown up out of all proportions. And that's why you get these kind of terrible killings happen.
Previously, without social media, you can disrespect someone and that might happen in private, whereas now if someone's saying something that's in a kind of public forum, everyone gets to see, then you're almost left with no choice but to react in some way.
Yeah, you have to, because this guy I was interviewing today who had got stabbed last year, he was saying that there's no way that, you know, if you can't protect yourself, if you keep on getting robbed, if you don't hold, you know, if you don't respond to criticism, you're a goner anyway. Like, you, the girls don't respect you. People will take the piss out of you. They'll just rob you. So you can't. It's a tough world, and you have to act tough in that kind of scenario. And that's why he carried a knife with him literally every day. And even after he was stabbed, he carried a knife in his crutch, because he had to protect himself. He didn't have any other option.
There was obviously a lot of discussion about acid attacks last year and kind of quite crazy statistics about how often that was happening. Have those attacks died down while knife crime has risen? Are those things related in any way? Is it different groups of people?
Yeah, I mean, I think acid attacks, you know, that was written about last year because it was huge rises in the number of acid attacks. And that was mainly... It was across the country, but it was mainly in East London and Essex. It was often related to young offenders. So it's young offenders using it to rob people, using it as revenge attacks instead of knives. It was also used sometimes outside of London with young drug dealers going on county lines to sell in places like Cambridge. And they would be squirting drug users who tried to nick money or tried to nick drugs, or they might be squirting rival dealers. So there's this huge jump in those attacks. And again, I think it was like I was saying with knife attacks. I think once there's been a spate of acid attacks, people start using it more. I know it sounds like it's a strange thing, because it's obviously such a horrific thing. People start getting really long sentences in the court, but still people going, right, well, that seems to be the thing to do. I'm going to get acid to protect myself in case maybe someone else has got some acid. So it became the kind of like one of the, you know, the weapon of last year. And I think, although it's less in the media now, when someone asked me whether acid attacks had just completely died out, I was started doing a little bit of research into it, and they haven't. They're still going on, probably not as much as they were last year, but it's still going on.
You know, like, I was looking through stories that have happened even since April about a 19-year-old who was stabbed over a WhatsApp argument who was least gay. There was a story just yesterday about two 17-year-old girls who one stabbed another after some kind of Instagram tit for tat. When you talk about a small world, just how small can that world be?
A lot of these people are living in quite contained communities, usually on kind of housing estates and streets and low rises and particular neighborhoods and particular postcodes. So it is a world where there's a lot of people kind of crammed together, and a lot of people know each other's business, especially amongst young people. Now this is like kind of times 100 by Instagram, which just, and Snapchat and other things like that, which acts as a kind of like a non-stop live in your face news bulletin of every little thing that happens to every young person in that area. So if someone's fallen over, someone's been robbed, someone's slept with someone else, someone's got a stupid haircut, literally everyone will know about it in the space of 5 seconds, and everyone else will be laughing at them. What most people do is they have to do something about that, and then that can sometimes result in people stabbing each other, shooting each other, because in this small, small world, relatively small beasts can take on a massive importance.
You said at the start that there hasn't been this higher level of knife crime since 2008. obviously, since there's been a lot of reporting on these attacks, there's a kind of reaction, something needs to be done. Is there anything, any sense that you get of how the heat was taken out of the situation previously, and if there's anything we can learn from before about if anything can be done?
It's a complex problem, so it's going to have kind of complex solutions, and you can do some knee-jerk things like kind of put more bobbies in the beat, be more restrictive about social media, about YouTube videos, things like that you could do that may help. But I would say that if you're really want to try and get to the root of this problem and stop these waves of killings in London, and this is what quite a lot of people on the streets have been telling me, people who have done stabbings and who have been stabbed themselves, they say that you've got to try and change things earlier on in their lives. And they're always talking about education. So a lot of them basically were pretty much kind of goners from school at age 11, 12. So then, and a lot of them talk about kind of being dropped too easily, as in like the education, schools didn't make enough of an effort to help them. And so they went down this kind of pathway of being expelled from school, then they'll be expelled from another school, then they'll end up in a pupil referral unit where basically everyone ends up selling drugs anyway, and then they'll be on the streets hanging around doing nothing with people who are selling drugs, who then have to get kind of armed up because they're out on the streets in the community. There's going to be small beefs over everything, and that can end in people getting killed. So what I'm saying is that I think if I was suggesting one major way of stopping this happening, it would be try harder in education.
Thanks very much to Max and Carol. Obviously, this is a really tough topic. I appreciate you guys talking it through with us. Thanks also to our producer, Sam Bonham from Rethink Audio. Obviously, this is the end of the episode, but also the end of the series. Like a French politician, we're going to take a long, boozy summer break, and we'll be coming back with season 4 soon. Until then, my name is Sam Wolfson. Am I the best podcast host in the world? Well, yeah, but it's not as simple as that.
Up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.